Welcome to Mustard A&A's. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Unless we have spousal college friends in, then we take a week off.
Yep.
Movies, TV, DVD, video games, computers, and that's where we're at.
Yep.
Let's see. Writer strike officially settled. It's over.
Yeah.
It's done. People are writing.
I know. That's great.
I've only seen one Daily Show since the writers came back. Just haven't had time to watch the others, and that's the
there's only two.
Well, I guess that's true.
Wednesday and Thursday. And I saw both of them. You know, I just didn't watch any of them during them, or as what Jon Stewart called, he said it was a Daily Show, and now it's the Daily Show.
Yeah.
And but they were great. It was fun to see it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, sort of looking at the ramifications and what's changed. I was just reviewing the list of affected TV shows, like Bionic Woman just out and out canceled. And I'm curious...
They canceled the whole series?
Yeah, I'm curious what goes into that decision. You know, I can't remember how many episodes actually aired before the strike. Was it like 3, 4?
I think it was like seven.
Was it really that many?
I think so.
Okay, well then it seems like you'd have a pretty... If you're not performing by 7 episodes, I can see how you're not going to restart on that one.
Yeah. In 24, they just gave up on. They're going to restart it next year.
Well, that'll be interesting to see if anybody... Well, do you know, are they going to scratch what they've already filmed, or are they going to start where they picked up? Pick up from where they left off?
I think they're going to pick up where they left off, but they said, you know, we want to show it in consecutive things, and if we did it, you know, right now, it'd end up in the middle of summer, and, you know, it was this weird decision, and I think it's baloney, to tell you the truth, but it was, you know, they're just kind of making do with what they got, I think.
That seems like kind of a line, because L.A.
Oh, I totally
looks
agree.
L.A. is L.A.
Yeah.
Well, what was interesting to me is, you know, what if the actors go through life changes? Somebody gets pregnant, somebody, I don't know, gets some new scar, that makeup, I don't know, I guess makeup.
Or Kiefer Sutherland goes back to prison. That was, you know, it was interesting because it almost worked out perfectly. I mean, if this strike had been over 3 weeks ago, they clearly would have just continued on, and the strike would have perfectly coincided with him being in friggin' jail, but it stretched on, you know, longer, and so they decided to cancel it. And I still don't understand that. I don't know if you've been hearing about this. I keep hearing these stories about these folks canceling this Oscar party and that Oscar party and stuff, even after the strike, and I actually don't get it. I'm not sure. Now that you know the Oscars are going on, why are you still canceling these big, fabulous Oscar parties you have? I'm not... Don't totally understand that.
I don't know. That's...
Maybe they're looking for excuses, and this is giving it to them.
So those are next week, right?
Next, 1 week from today.
Woohoo!
I love the Oscars.
Let's see what else. Oh, I just read on Dark Horizons that the Terminator series is, well, air like the remainder of its episodes, but probably not coming back.
Really? Just not getting them? Well,
I don't know, because that one's what, less than a month old?
Yeah, it's amazing. Boy, that sucks. I'm enjoying that. But
to me, it's just, you look at the amount of marketing they've put into it, and it's been a tremendous amount of marketing.
I know, it was all over the Super Bowl. The one good thing I remembered, or ad about that Super Bowl, the very best thing, or wasn't really an ad, was they still show on that stupid bouncing robot football player. I hate that. That little bug in the corner of
him. You know,
him.
It's funny because everyone at my quote-unquote Super Bowl party was making the exact same comment about how much they hated that stupid robot.
I mean, everybody. You and I were talking about like 2 years ago how much we hated it. It's still going on. And I haven't watched that much football, so I'd forgot it was still going on. And every time it comes out, I hate it. And then one time the Terminator comes out and shoves it off the screen, and it was like, yay, it was so great. I wish they did it every time, but anyway, the anyway, it's clearly an expensive show to put on, but boy, I'm just surprised they would already be talking about getting rid of it.
Boy, Fox just seems, I mean, I know they all are much more ready to pull the plug now than they used to be, but Fox just really seems to pull the plug, especially with SF stuff. You know, why are you going to put these shows on? Why do it to begin with if you're not going to really support it? You know, yeah. Of course, I'm thinking of Firefly and, well, I guess just Firefly. But that was a bitter defeat.
Yeah.
And I was just reminded yesterday that, you know, Joss Whedon has a new series coming out with Fox that's vaguely SF-ish.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I completely forgot about it. But it's with Eliza Dushku.
Yeah.
And she had a deal. She had a development deal with Fox, and she was having a lunch meeting with Joss Whedon about just stuff in general. And he says he went to the bathroom and came back to lunch and said, "I've got this idea for a series," and she loved it, and they pitched it, and that, you know, like within a week they had it pretty much done. And wow. Like a 7-episode commitment from Fox. Hmm. And, you know, my take, and I'm sure he has to be feeling the same thing, enjoy it while it lasts, because you may not be getting an 8th.
Wow.
And then some other, the movie schedule's getting shuffled around. Paramount shuffled their entire schedule. The most significant
was Star Trek. They pumped it back 6 months.
I know.
It was weird because I just don't actually totally understand that, tell you the truth. Because weren't they just going whole hog and the writer's strike wasn't really affecting that?
Well, that's what they said. Abrams said that there were a few script changes he would have liked to have made.
Well, the one thing about that, it's so early in the process, it's not something you have to worry about in terms of, oh, it's because they're worried about the quality, and the only thing that's going to do is help make that a better movie. So it's not like it's like late in the process and they're just freaking out because they think it's got problems. I mean, I can't.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And then there was another big movie they got bumped to. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, it was crazy, crazy.
I was thinking I had more to say on things getting bumped, but really I don't. It'll be interesting to see, how they space things out and if there's a definite lack of quality movies as a result of this strike and or the upcoming actor's strike.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to wonder what's going to happen with the actor's strike because that's they're due to strike in June.
Yeah. They're getting some of the... The heavyweight actors are really putting pressure, saying we don't want to screw this up. You know, solve this beforehand.
Well, but, there was what was I just going to say about that? Oh, I was listening to one of the Alex Lindsay podcasts. It was either MacBreak Weekly or This Week in Media, yep. And he was saying that you know he had a contact at a studio, and from their perspective, the big thing they would not bend on was animation writers and reality writers and admitting them to the guild. And they said, you know what, if that's what the Writers Guild wants, you know, they can be on strike forever because we will never, ever allow that to happen. And I thought, you know, from a cold-hearted business perspective, I suppose I can kind of see where they're coming from, but oh my God, what a dick move, basically.
Oh, absolutely. It's just basically saying, listen, we've settled on this. We're willing to work with this, but these are perceived as new, and we're not going to do it.
Well, we can't under any circumstances let the union get bigger or let the union get more power, even though it so clearly makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's not like they're trying to draft some. I don't know.
It took them long enough to admit that, you know, reality shows even have writers and need them.
Oh, my God. I actually, we watched An American Gladiators last week.
You know, I did, too. It was like I finally watched that. I don't know what your opinion was, but I was shocked. It seemed amateurish. And it was amazing how they didn't really change it from the old times. But I just get tired of them cutting to the participants with their stupid canned, each time a little canned repost to the gladiators, whatever. I couldn't stand it. But I don't know, it just seemed, maybe it was the guy who was doing the narration, the clearly after the after recorded after the event narration, but it just seemed kind of terrible. No, to tell you the truth.
It was such a joke because we started watching. I set up my DVR to record it, and we only started watching it about 8 minutes late, and we realized quickly we needed to let the whole thing record because we were fast forwarding not only through the commercials, but through everything that wasn't a stunt.
Yep.
Because actually watching, you know, sort of the obstacle course stuff was still kind of fun.
Yeah, but boy, I mean, let me, just like the original show, that'll get old after like three episodes.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. But it was so bombastic and so ridiculous. And Hulk Hogan, oh my God, what did you think about that? And was that the most amazing thing ever? And
I know.
And it was patently ridiculous. And, you know, here's the contestant's life story, and I'm playing for my kids, and oh my God, who cares?
Yeah. It's the trend that they've done in the past 4 or 5 years of really, somebody realized like 4 or 5 years ago that for like a game show, the real thing is in casting these participants, not realizing they're nobodies, but really selling them and getting people and then coaching them how to be excited and voluble. And the worst one is that Howie Mandel deal or no deal, because you get these people on here and they're encouraged to talk and yammer, and I hate them. I mean, I just hate it so much. And this show is similar, and a lot of these people really, that's clearly not their element, but they're playing along as they're, you know, as they're talking about their life story and as they shoehorn that element to their life story that they're told to talk about into some diss of some gladiator they're about to go against. It's just awful, awful.
Well, there's this one gladiator with the name Wolf,
yeah.
And he starts howling. And
he's got the long hair and the sideburns.
Made some comment, oh, their blood will be dripping from my fangs.
Yeah.
And you just, you're embarrassed for even watching it, but you're like, oh my God, I'm embarrassed for you. I'm embarrassed for everyone that heard that. I'm embarrassed for humanity.
Yep.
But what else is I going to say about, you know, actually who I felt the sorriest for were the people in the stands where they've taken over the soundstage and done this whole big thing.
Yeah.
Because clearly there's a lot of setup time in between, you know, each stunt. And the stunt can be over in 30 seconds. And I'm thinking, you know, if you've got to wait 10 minutes and, you know, what I'm sure is a cold soundstage.
And the way it works as well is that is that the soundstage, you may be sitting in a certain spot, but the actual stunt may be like 100 like or 50 yards away from you because it's over in the swimming pool. So you're not actually staring right at it. It's got to be awful. And it's probably some sucker that was on the Universal Studios tour ago, you want to be at a free taping? And it just, you know, it's just a recipe for badness all around.
I completely agree. And I was very, I knew it was going to be bad. I wasn't under any...
I thought they were going to, I don't know how, but I thought it was going to be updated in a way that would go, okay, this is cool for now. I mean, I liked it sort of back then, and it was weird how retro it was and how much it, other than the lighting, the one difference between any shows that was like mid-1990s or before and now, is now everything is about dramatic lighting, everything. The, you know, any of those game shows, Deal or No Deal, and all those other ones, it's all this dramatic lighting, and this is no different. And parts of the show, I'm going, damn, they're competing in the dark. You know, it's like they're going in and out of shadows, and it just seemed kind of, and versus the original show was just bathed in light. Every single, there was no shadows, it was just light everywhere. And nowadays, you know, any show worth its salt from a newscast, anything else has dramatic shadows and dramatic lighting, and this was no different. Other than that, there was absolutely no difference between this show and the original show. Hated it. Hated it.
Yeah, I will have no need to watch that ridiculousness again.
You know, it's funny. I've been building my dad's bathroom, rebuilding, and it's like this never-ending project because we're, you know, doing crazy stuff. So I go over to his house, and when we're done, he'll go out and sit down and watch TV. And it's funny because some of the shows that I watch, he watches. So we're sitting there, and they're great shows. And I'm thinking, okay, cool. My dad's into The Wire, or he'll watch, you know, just some high-end drama. And then I'll look at the other shows on his TiVo, and it just kind of sad because he's got like NCIS and Law and Order Special Victims Unit, and I've sat through these things, and they're so awful. It's melodrama and stupid writing, and I often think, you know, if I'm an actor, I'd hate to be on that show or whatever. By the same token, they're probably happy because it's a real decent, great paycheck, but it's just awful. And Law and Order Special Victims Unit, which I hardly ever watched before, it's so weird. It's like regular Law and Order, which is a real by-the-book classic. You know, no real storyline for the actors. It's just moving. It's just telling an individual story each episode. Versus this show, where it's like that show, only with the intrusion, the uncomfortable intrusion of lots of melodrama, and it's just a terrible, terrible show. And it's got these talented actors that I've seen in other shows, like Christopher Maloney, and that's the one with Richard Belzer in it.
Mm-hmm.
But just awful, awful. And then I go, damn, Dad. But you like The Wire, and I go, I get the feeling you don't like The Wire for the same reason I like The Wire. So,
yeah, it's really interesting when that happens. You know, we were seeing, because this was Valentine's Day week, and we were seeing commercials for, oh, God, what's that Ryan Reynolds romantic comedy?
Oh, The Lover, Peter... Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
The titles are so bad, they all run into each other.
I know.
But it's from the same people that brought you Love Actually.
Yeah, I keep thinking it's Love Actually because that's what they keep saying.
And Nancy,
like that minor hit was a big thing to...
Nancy turns to me and says, we saw it together, right? And I'm like, yeah, it was actually one of our... I don't know if it was one of our first dates, but it was early on because I remember I had a pass to see that film at a screening.
Yeah,
and she's like, "Yeah, that was one of the worst movies I've ever seen." I was mentioning that to another buddy of mine. He's like, "Yeah, that's my girlfriend's favorite movie," and I was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, dude." Oh, and he just kind of shrugs. He's like, "What are you gonna do?"
You know, they had some article he sees all the time about what do you do when your wife is. You know, a red and you're a blue or whatever, basically meaning if you have political opposites and how that handles. And I'm going, you know, honestly, that's not a huge deal to me. If they're into Love Actually and I'm not, that's a big freaking deal. I used to always talk, although, like, for me, the deal breaker would be, you know, A, what did they think of Annie Hall? Or if they even knew what it was. I mean, if they didn't know what it was, that's one thing. But if they didn't think it was funny or if they didn't do this and that, that would be very problematic. Although that's such an old reference now, I'd probably have to think of something new. But, I mean, that would be problematic. Somebody who, if my wife was really into Love Actually, I'd be like, God damn. I mean, how do you deal with that? Because that means other movies in that genre, it's going to be a constant tension, you know?
That would be hard. Yeah, I remember that was one of the closest to fights I ever had with an ex-girlfriend was over bad movie choice, and she wanted to see this. She saw a poster for A Smile Like Yours, this movie no one's ever heard of. But we talked about
the
this
Greg
like
Kinnear thing
a year and a half ago in a podcast.
Oh, and that was the worst poster. It was a wearing sunglasses.
A drooling baby with mirrored sunglasses. And one shade was Greg Kinnear, and then the other was Lauren Holly. And it looked horrid. And she said, oh, I want to see that. And I made some crack about there's no way in hell I'd ever see that. And this is when I was basically dragging her to see Chasing Amy. And we basically got into a fight about, you know, she's willing to see my movie. And, of course, the response is, well, the movies I want to see are good. And there's no way in hell that's good. You know, which is, you can have a chick flick that's a chick flick and still be a good movie. And there's nothing wrong with that. I agree. You can say, you know, I have very little interest in seeing this movie just because I'm not into chick flicks, but there's nothing intrinsically wrong with it as a movie versus this is just a bad movie and there's just no objective way of getting around it.
Yeah. It's not a good thing, but my ex-wife, she just would she would never express an opinion about wanting to see a movie or not. She would just let me choose them. And I think that was probably not a good thing for me, but she knew how much I was into movies, and she probably was worried if I didn't like it that I don't know, she felt bad. So I pretty much picked every movie, every single one.
Anyway, I don't know how we got off onto that, but new Indiana Jones trailer is out.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it hit the right notes. You know, got Harrison Ford making fun of himself. You've got, you know, action. You've got the, you know, you've got this set piece going on in that that military hangar where the Ark was stored. Which,
yeah, I like to see that.
Just hearing about that idea and seeing that, I'm like, that is so cool. Whatever they're doing, I want to see that. What a great idea to revisit that. And yet, you know, Jeffrey Wells has been pointing out that there's apparently some aliens thing going on. If you really study the poster, there's like an alien head and the skull, that image,
that crystal skull image that was on all the websites and then pulled because they didn't want anybody to see it thing. Well, that the skull was clearly an alien. It looks sort of humanoid.
My understanding was it wasn't that. It was that there was an alien face in one of the teeth, like just sort of as a design thing.
But that skull, if you look at the skull had these big eyes, this narrow head. It was not a human skull. And the fact that if you look close in the trailer, you'll see the words Roswell, New Mexico in there. And the fact that it takes place around 1947, 1950, it's pretty clearly the... you know, that alien part is. And that's cool. As long as it doesn't become this whole enormous alien thing, that's cool. It could be great.
I don't know. It kind of puts me off a little bit because it's...
Well, you're not the only one. A lot of other people are too. And to me a little bit too. But if they incorporate it well and it's part of the thing that's in there and it's not the overall and the thing, I'll be happy.
Well, the first thing too was it made me think of I was flipping through some old Penny Arcade books, not that they're that old, but that are collecting the old Penny Arcade strips and some of the commentary by Tycho, and he was saying they'd done a strip on AI, and he reproduced the commentary, and he was saying what was great about this movie is that in the end, hair saved the day. And then when you thought you were done, he puts a whole other movie at the end of it.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a great way of saying that, because that was exactly the reaction that I had. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, but hearing that, it kind of like, oh, I hope they do a good job and I'll see what happens. But that kind of made me want to read the first script that Frank Darabont turned in and was rejected by Lucas.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, of course, it'll be interesting to see how massive that movie rollout is. You know, will it be on every single screen in America? If you go to a Cineplex, a multiplex, how many of the screens will it be on?
Yeah, that's
because
true.
There's a lot of, you can look at a lot of blockbusters coming out, but even more than Pirates of the Caribbean, this thing is just printing money.
Yeah.
You know that there's no more critical review-proof movie than Indiana Jones.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And yet, as I'm saying that, I'm starting to think, although, is it maybe now, when did the last one come out?
Was it 89, 86,
almost 20
85?
Years ago.
Yeah, almost 20 years ago.
Are you starting to run into that thing where you pointed out from the Simpsons movie where a lot of people weren't getting the jokes and didn't know who Milhouse was?
Yeah.
And that's something that's been on continuously. You start looking at Indiana Jones, and will the younger generation
care? Well, it's not that
care?
Big of a deal, because things like... Hey, Ruby. Oh, God. God damn it. Oh, good. Okay. Ruby is like wandering next to my Ethernet cable with that look on her face. Like, I'm going to knock this over and screw you up. But anyway, I mean, with Indiana Jones, it's not like there's that much to reference. And what they do, you know, they're bringing back Marion and some others. And it's like, I don't know. I don't think it's quite like The Simpsons, where it was like these in-depth, specific joke references
Not so much beyond. I mean, the problem with The Simpsons was that nobody was getting the references. And I don't think that would be the problem. I think it would just be younger people in general have heard of Indiana Jones, but are they invested enough to see it?
Oh, absolutely. It? That's the huge problem. They're making a real clear point in this movie. It was pretty clear with this trailer. And I don't know how CGI crazy they're going to get, but it was pretty clear that they're making a real commitment to actual stunts, because that's what their first movies were all about. And they're not as spectacular nowadays when we think about knowing how they do them, but they're making this commitment to that. Well, will that fly? I mean, I love watching the old Indiana Jones movies, but in a sense, nowadays, it almost feels... See, when those first movies came out, they were an attempt to recapture these serial movies from 40 years earlier. Well, and it was kind of anachronistic, but really fun. Well, nowadays, watching Indiana Jones is kind of like... It's kind of like watching an old movie in a way that it didn't feel like back then. Back then, it felt like something new. It was like a refreshing look at the old ones, and now it might just feel old. I don't know. It's hard to know how exciting it will be age of 300 and stuff.
I'm not even approaching it so much from that perspective, but just so much as the brand, you know, does the brand mean anything to young people?
Yeah.
Really, that's it. Because
my feeling is probably not that much, because they don't really play on TV. The DVD sold to tons of us, you know, late baby boomers, but I don't know. I don't think it's like Star Wars, but who knows? My feeling is the brand. I'd be willing to bet if you interviewed a bunch of people 20 and younger about Indiana Jones. I mean, remember, they weren't even born when last one came out.
I know.
So I don't think it's going to play that well. But I imagine they're going to do everything they can prior to its release to reintroduce it to people. But, you know, I don't think it'll play it well. I still think it'll make a mint, but it's going to make a mint for different reasons than the other ones did.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I will be totally sucked in.
Yeah, well, there's no chance I won't. That said, doesn't mean I'm going to enjoy it. I mean, it might be, if it's going to be Star Wars Episode One all over again, I'll be there opening day and I'll enjoy it, but it's not going to leave the greatest taste in my mouth.
Yeah, and I was now I'm jumping topics. I was all set to go see Jumper with my friend John yesterday, and we're going to see it early, and you know, Doug Liman, and it was going to be great, or, you know, pretty good. And then
hard to avoid all those reviews, though.
And, well, no, actually, I didn't hear a single thing. I saw that, you know, Wells kind of said that it wasn't supposed to be very good, but I wasn't expecting anything else. But then I checked Rotten Tomatoes, and Let me guess,
like 10%.
When I checked yesterday morning, 15%.
Oh.
With a top critic of 3%.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, I can't do it. I cannot go and spend, you know, 3 hours of my life going there, coming back, and my money on something that's so clearly bad. I just couldn't do it. And I called him up and said, I apologize, dude. I know you're looking forward to this, but how about you come over and play Xbox instead? Which is what happened. But
speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, they totally redid their site, and if you ask me, it's a mess.
I didn't really notice.
It's harder to figure out, and things, it used to be, you know, everything was all condensed in one page, and now now it takes like 5 clicks to get to some things. And I thought I was the only one who was going, this is terrible. And then I read in the Roger Ebert column last week, like the movie Answerman, he was commenting the same thing, that it was awful. And some others too. I mean, they've decided to redo it, but they didn't make it better. They made it uglier and worse, which is too bad.
Well, You say that, but that's one of those sites I go there for one purpose, to see what the meta opinion is.
I know, and then
is.
They're making it harder to get to that point. It's like,
I don't know,
awful.
You click on a movie and you get the percentage and I'm done.
Yeah.
And, if it's more of a 50% movie, then I'll start reading the opinions of what's, these pull quotes of why people are saying they are, and it's like, okay, that will bother me or that won't bother me. And to me, I saw those pull quotes yesterday, and it did what I needed it to do. So, to me, I don't care what the design of that site is, as long as I can do what I need to do.
And well, Ebert was pointing out he was all ticked off because of the way they did the layout on certain of the quotes. They were like A, written in all caps, and B, really tiny. Couldn't actually read them. And he sent a letter to their customer support, and they're saying it's sort of beta at this point, but it clearly works just fine in Firefox. And he's thinking, dude, I know you may be philosophically opposed to Internet Explorer, but half your customers use it. So you're telling me it doesn't even work in Internet Explorer?
That is so ridiculous. Back when I was doing the sort of web dev work where I was, maintaining a site for somebody, that was, I don't know if it was critical, but it was right up there. Your site, you needed to have both browsers, and you needed to check it against those.
Absolutely. That's what, when I was developing a couple sites last couple months, it was the same thing. I was sitting there running Safari, running Explorer, and often that was like 100% of my time for hours on end, just tweaking them to make sure it worked in each one right and figure out the vagaries. And I wish they all worked exactly like each other, but they don't. And you want that to work.
Fundamentally ridiculous. You start, especially when you start getting into tables, even simple table stuff and IEs rendering it differently, and you're just, oh my God.
Yeah.
But that's a different show.
There was a couple little things. I noticed a couple of my websites. I was looking at that Google Analytics, and it's weird to see that, first of all, how many people on an iPhone are looking at my stupid websites? And then there's these other unbelievably bizarre browsers, but I was like, wow, I am not going to tweak my website for an iPhone, but who in the hell is reading, these bizarre little websites on an iPhone? I mean, that iPhone thing, I think it's a much bigger deal than people are making it out to be at least as a web platform. Don't you have to pay? I mean, can you do iPhones, you can get the internet through Wi-Fi, right?
Yep.
With the iPhone? Okay, then that's not so bad. I'm sitting here thinking, if somebody's like paying to surf obscure websites on an iPhone, you are a sucker.
And what else is that? Oh, and the other, there's another couple more nails in the HD DVD coffin this week.
Well, the big nail is that Toshiba is apparently announcing they're getting out of the business.
Well, that's kind of
the nail of all nails.
It was reported by NHK, one of Japan's news networks. That hasn't been confirmed yet. That's just a rumor, and it's probably right, but that one's not official. The official stuff that happened was Netflix dropped it, Walmart dropped it. I don't think it was this week. I think it was the week before that the other studio dropped it.
You know what's weird that blew me away to realize how nascent this industry is, first of all, it sucks. I have my single HD DVD movie, which will kind of sit there forever. Although I might pick up some fire sale ones if they start dumping them at fire sale. But anyway, what was weird was I was looking at this, and apparently in HD DVD and Blu-ray, there's really only about 350 to 400 titles available. In other words, they haven't really been pumping a bunch of them out. I personally have a collection of like about 1,100 DVDs. Well, the entirety of the collections in high def is like a third of my collection.
I know.
So I could get every single one, and it would take up a third of my collection. I didn't realize they weren't pumping them out more, but really they're being very selective.
Well, there was,
and I think there's more Blu-ray, but there really isn't that many floating around out there.
I was floating around on some tech site. I don't know if it was AVS forums or something. And somebody was pointing out in response to the where's the 360 add-on Blu-ray drive? This is ridiculous. And somebody pointed out a couple of things that I hadn't thought of, and one is that Blu-ray, right? I don't know if it's all the Blu-ray players, but essentially you need like some of the language to interpret it is written in Java, and Microsoft, of course, not a big Java fan.
They've dealt with it before.
And there were a few other technical points of how Blu-ray players actually work, and I can't remember if it was software or chipset stuff that made it. That at the time I read it was like, oh, that would be a problem. But then I thought about it, and I'm like, but you know what? If you're putting, if you have a standalone external Blu-ray drive for a computer, I'm not sure why you couldn't have one for the 360, which is essentially a computer.
Yep.
And I'd have to go back and check and see if there's something specific that an actual PC has in it that a 360 doesn't, that an external drive would need to work. There might be some other technical reason that I haven't thought of.
I can't imagine being technical. I can only imagine it being cost.
Well, you know, that being the case, I still don't understand why there hasn't been an announcement, because I still think that there is a certain percentage of people that will now go to a PS3 because the format war has been decided, and without a 360 solution, I don't think it's a very large percentage right now.
Well, did you see that they announced numbers that I think it was like in November or December that the PS3 sold more than the Xbox, and the Xbox was saying, well, this was an anomaly because
it was the
we were having
numbers.
Supply issues, and that seemed to me a really weak excuse, honestly, to say we're having supply issues. If they're having supply issues 2 years into the run of the Xbox, somebody really screwed up.
I think it's... You know, it's related to their live problems. They clearly sold, they sold way more than they thought they would through the holiday season. And they said, you know, we're still not recovered from replenishing the channels.
I understand that. I'm just stunned that they would not have been better prepared for that.
You know, and that's what everybody's saying. They said, you know, Halo 3 had come out. There were all these titles, Assassin's Creed, Call of Duty 4. All of these titles that had come out, how could you not have been better prepared? And they kind of shrug and say, we thought it was going to be big. We didn't know it was going to be this big. And I'm of two minds. I completely agree. You're a gigantic company with access to all those forecasting tools. On the other hand, you just didn't know. Nobody's perfect.
I agree. But the thing is it's not that far out of the realm to go, let's take a bet, and if we don't sell them, they may sit in inventory for even 6 months, which is not going to kill us.
Well, I think,
but if we,
I think part of it though would be the I think it's there's more of a shell game going on behind the scenes in terms of, you know, if you're tracking the sites this week, and I don't know if you were because you were in your dad's bathroom tiling all week.
No, that was last week. Now it's making cabinets.
Oh, God.
That's kind of fun, but yeah.
But
no,
they were talking about two new motherboard designs for the Xbox, one of which is, and this is all rumor, so who knows. But one of them saying, we're taking all the elements that work and putting them on a chipset, on a board, for our replacement boxes. You won't be able to buy this board retail, but if you send in a box to get replaced, this is what you're getting back. And so you have to wonder, they're constantly improving their manufacturing and saying, whoops, this heatsink doesn't work, or we can make this chip for a lot cheaper now, it's smaller, it's thinner, whatever. So we don't want to make more of this chipset that we know the failure rate on, and we know we're going to have to replace X percentage of boxes with this chipset. If we can get away with making as few of those as possible so that we can ramp up the next chipset and make this other one where it costs us less to make, we know we're going to have to replace fewer, that's the one we want to ramp up on, but we're not ready to ramp up on it yet. I get the impression that they were trying to really play it close to the bone and say, we don't want to make more of this one than we absolutely have to. We want to move on to the next revision and make it, but they weren't ready yet. And I'm kind of, that's what makes the most sense to me. But, who knows?
Yeah, well, as I hear you, but as a valued as a guy who loves the Xbox and wants to see the PS3 crush like a bug, it's a little disturbing to think there actually were customers out there who actually went out to find an Xbox, couldn't find it, and probably bought the PS3 instead just because they couldn't find it. That kills
me. I know, and me too. And on the other hand, I mean, there's so many aspects to it and facets to it. You know, if you start looking at it from the perspective of, okay, I want to play video games, and then you look at each system, which games are available, it is still the 360 by a mile. There's just very little out for the PS3. I mean, you can look and see there's some stuff coming down the road, like, you know, Metal Gear Solid, and that's going to be great. And yes, there'll be Grand Theft Auto, but that'll be on both systems. But there's, if you're just looking at it from the perspective of what games you want to play, there's very little on the PS3 that's either exclusive. I mean, I guess Ratchet and Clank is pretty good, Resistance, Fall of Man, and there's like maybe one or two other titles that are out exclusively for the PS3.
But, yeah, and they don't have any premier Halo kind of title that defines the game.
So you look at it from that perspective, and there's just, you know, it's like, well, from that I keep repeating myself, but from the availability of games, it's still the 360 by a mile.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how many people definitely bought and continue to think about the PlayStation just because of the PlayStation brand. My brother was a case in point. I mean, last year he bought it, and I think he had to wait till after Christmas, but it was one of those things where he wouldn't even consider the 360. No, I'm getting a PlayStation. And then he kept telling me, well, it's because it's going to, you know, be able to play all these old games. And I go, Mitch, I don't want to do this, but if you'd like to place a bet, I'm going to bet you never put an old PlayStation game in here, ever. And if you do, you know, you kind of have your old PlayStation. You could always hook it up if you want to. So it's been a year, and I asked him, how many times did he play an old PlayStation game? And it's zero. You know, and but he likes it. It's not a bad thing, but it's just like, it was killing me. I'm going, dude, if you get a 360, you know, you can borrow my games. And but he had no interest in it.
Well, it's interesting because to me, and my, you know, my circle of friends, if you will, a lot of the consideration was, what are they buying? Because I want to play with them.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to get it, I think mainly because of Halo. It was just, you know, icing on the cake. But a lot of my other friends were like, well, that's what all my friends are. And if I want to play with them online, and Live is an excellent service that's, you know, fully baked, this is the box I need to buy. And so that's interesting. It's like if I were your brother and I wanted to play online with you, which would be cool, you'd get it.
Yeah, but honestly, both him and I, that's not a huge, we don't really care about that.
Okay.
So it's but I hear what you're saying, but it's just, I don't know, for him it was like, I've enjoyed PlayStation for 5 years now. That's the direction I want to go.
Well, and
I might have, and if I was looking at a new Xbox, like they came out with a new Xbox and there was a new PlayStation, I'd probably say the same thing. I'd go, well, I want to stick with the Xbox.
Yeah, I
don't know. Speaking of the Live service, have you heard anything further about this free game they're giving people because of the outage or anything? Have they even mentioned anything about that?
That happened. That happened like a month ago.
Yeah, I missed what the game was.
It was Undertow.
So they gave out Undertow. Okay.
Yeah, and if you already had it, you were supposed to call support, and I don't know if they're going to give you points or a backup game. I imagine points, but if you already had it, you could call support and they'd hook you up.
So in other words, just like I suggested, first of all, that's good that it's a good game. But despite what everybody said, where everybody thought they were going to get their choice of games, your choice is Undertow.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't have it.
Again, I'm ambivalent because I really wasn't particularly affected. But the idea that we're going to give you a game of our choosing for a lot of people, that is no real...
I'm wondering if there's a legal agreement around that where they have agreed with the publishers that they will not randomly give out points for some reason, because points are equal to cash, and you can, I don't know, there might be some other back end.
No, I think they're basically saying that it's clearly financial. I guarantee a publisher doesn't care as long as they get paid. What the publisher doesn't want is for their game to be given away free and they don't get paid. But a publisher doesn't care if somebody where that money comes from.
I'm just saying there might be some back end legal thing involving points and money that would prevent them from just blanketly assigning points. Because I agree, to me that's the obvious solution, is you just give people points and then let them either extend their service a month or buy a movie or a TV series let them
do whatever
they want.
The whole thing leaves kind of a bad taste in my mouth. They really should have paid attention to how Apple handles this.
Well, all I could,
because Apple invariably comes up with a solution before you even realize there's a problem, and it invariably is the effectively.
Not invariably.
In a couple of situations where they've
just
had that.
Thinking the iPhone pricing thing was a reaction. That was not a proactive move.
The iPhone what?
The iPhone pricing thing. When they dropped the price of the iPhone by $200,
yeah,
and people got pissed. And they said,
"Yeah, you're right."
So I still
can't believe that was even an issue, and people got upset. I was going, "Dude, you knew this going into this." I can't believe people were pissed off about that. I mean, the minute you're waiting in line for a stupid phone for a half a day or a day, you have ceded the right to get pissed off that it was overpriced.
I know. Yeah, so I'm pretty much just waiting for a 3G version now, and I'm probably in. They bumped it, and I want.
Well, with my new job, I don't know. We'll see how it works, but my new job I'll get a cell phone for it, and I'm gonna try and make sure whatever I get is AT&T, even though I hate AT&T, just so. I probably won't get an iPhone right away, but I want to make sure that I'm committed to that, so it'll be easy just to transition into it. Maybe I can afford it. I'm asking so damn much money that I don't know if there's going to be any leftover for a phone.
Yeah, wait till they see your ideas for, we need this high-def camera, and are you aware that you need this computer to process
that? I already pointed out that that's a direction I'll be going, so if they don't like that, you can look for a different person, but if you want to be successful, it's going to involve getting a decent SLR camera and a high def video camera.
It cracks me up, the jobs that both you and I have moved on from, and you know that all this expensive high quality gear is sitting there and nobody's using it for anything.
Oh, I know, it kills me. It killed me I've done that at three jobs, and and each time I can just think. In fact, last weekend I had to do this photo shoot, and I had to get this volunteer from West Seattle, and really she wasn't that good, so really I was just getting borrowing a Nikon D100 from West Seattle, because that's all I was doing. and it killed me, because I know at PAWS, Seattle Audubon, at Perfect Pals, there's three really good SLR digital cameras sitting there that I can't use.
Well, I wasn't even thinking so much of the SLRs. I was thinking of the camcorders.
No, I know. At Perfect Pals, where I worked last, they have a high-def video camera that I would love to use, but it's theirs, not mine.
Oh, it kills me. People so un...
That's the downside of my jobs. I keep taking jobs that are really intriguing to me and that will stock up on the high-end equipment that I love. The problem is, when you leave those jobs, it's not your equipment. You can't take it with you.
Yeah.
So, it's too bad. But that's the beauty of another job. Get another job and invest right back into that equipment and keep Sony in business.
Anything else you want to touch on?
Well, I saw a movie yesterday.
And what movie was that?
The Rape of Europa.
Okay, I've never heard of that.
Well, it's a documentary about about World War II and both the looting of antiquities and how, not antiquities, artwork by the Nazis, and how it was dealt with and other stuff. And it was real interesting. It was interesting. You're talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark, because the breadth of the looting by the Nazis was stunning. They were just going around and just stealing everything they could get their hands on. And there was a couple times where they would do shots of these warehouses where it looked exactly like the warehouse scene from Raiders that they're referencing in this new trailer, where it's just acres of boxes boxed up with artwork. And it looked just like Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, it was amazing how much was stolen. It was actually a really quite good documentary. And one of the fun or interesting scenes was they were talking about prior to the German invasion of France, the folks at Le Louvre, they had prepared for this. They boxed up everything and shipped them all off to southern France to these villas for safekeeping during the war. And if you've ever, and I don't think you've been to Le Louvre, but it's the amount of artwork they had to box up is truly mind-boggling. I mean, it's an enormous, enormous place. I mean, you if you're used to American museums, you can't quite grasp how big this place is. But anyway, so they boxed it up and shipped it off to southern France. And it was interesting, this one lady was talking about how, yeah, they lived in this villa during World War II, and she was a little girl, and she said, and we had one room, and it was just for the Mona Lisa. So this little girl, her entire war effort was spent living in a castle in southern France, and one of the rooms that she lived in had the Mona Lisa in, which she could go visit every day. Thinking that's a heck of an experience. Now, admittedly, it's boxed up, but she would flip it open. They would look and pull back the velvet and look at the Mona Lisa all the time. And I thought that's a cool experience. But anyway, it was an interesting documentary, and it was really good. And it's one of those documentaries that doesn't even remotely talk about modern times, but it's hard not to see the parallel, because one of the big stories of this was how prior to this war, these people created this commission in America and said, listen, you're going to go to war in Europe. You have to take into account the artwork and what's going on. And if you can, take steps to protect it, take steps to prevent it from looting. So the Americans basically inducted a couple hundred guys into the army that were art experts. And as we were going through Europe, they would follow up immediately after we take land and start securing and figuring out where the artwork was, and then getting it back to the original people. And they call them monument men. And these guys, they were talking about how in Florence, the Nazis just looted everything. And these guys went and protected all of Florence. And Florence was a very important capital. And the Nazis, when they left, had blown up the bridges. And then this one guy tracked down all the original artwork, packed it up in a train, and he had to put the value of it, and even in 1945 dollars, is valued at $500 million, and shipped it back, you know, to Florence. And the people of Florence had this parade for him, and they were crying as they're bringing all of their important artwork back into Florence. And I couldn't help but, you can't help but contrast that between 2003 when we march into to Baghdad. And we know about all the artwork and all the other stuff. And what did we do? We didn't bother to protect it. In World War II, they put that in part of their planning, that we need to, A, protect this, and B, preserve it for these people. And later now, we just sort of don't. And you realize propaganda-wise how important that was to the people, to say, wow, the Americans, they wanted to protect our heritage, and how we can't sort of say that now. It's, you know, it's hard not to see that parallel. Huh. But anyway, to a certain extent, you go to a documentary like that, and it feels a little like, wow, this is a Frontline episode that they've put up on the big screen. And this was somewhat like that, but it was still pretty good. And I definitely enjoyed it. And it was that rare thing that my dad and uncle go, hey, let's go check out this documentary. I'm going, what? You want to go see a documentary that's half in a different language? Well, I'm all for that. Let's go. That's funny. But anyway, other than that, I haven't seen any.
I'm thinking today I'll go see something, probably either No Country for Old Men or Juno. So,
oh, good.
We'll see.
You should definitely see No Country for Old Men. Just see it before the Oscars. It's a great movie.
We'll see.
Great movie.
We'll see what happens.
You'll see if it's and I heard Juno's great too. I had those tickets to it, you know, before it opened, but I didn't take advantage of it and haven't seen it since.
All right. Well, it sounds like we're finishing up in a timely fashion.
We have the Oscars 1 week from today.
Okay.
That should be fun. I'm looking forward to that. Jon Stewart taking the week off, which kills me. They get back from the strike. He does two shows. Takes a week off to go see do the Oscars. That's what he's got to do, but it's kind of a momentum killer. I wonder if Colbert takes the week off, because they always have the same schedule. But for some reason, I don't think he'll take this week off.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
All right. If you would like to contact us, you guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. Is the way to go. And that's it. My name's Matt.
And I am Richard. And Ricardo Montalban.
Mas macho. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Mas macho.